Hey guys, it's Albert. We're going to open things up by talking, yes, about the brilliance of Tom Brady. Then Connor and Jenny come in for the news. And as always, we wrap things up with a six-pack of your Twitter questions. Let's go. All right, welcome in. Week 6 is in the books. It's the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And I'm going to lead off this week with a look at what's old being new. We heard a lot over the first month and a half of the season about Patrick Mahomes' emergence as a potential MVP candidate. We heard a lot about Jared Goff and how he's playing in Los Angeles. Obviously, a lot made of Aaron Rodgers' injury. And I think what we saw on Sunday night was once again that even at 41 years old, even with an uneven first 5 weeks of the season, Tom Brady is still the most reliable quarterback in football. And for my money, and I'm not saying you'd want to build around him for the next 5 years, and I'm not saying that you'd he'd be the one that you'd pick even for 2019, because there's so much uncertain with, you know, with his age and, you know, where he'll be a year from now and everything else. But today, I think if you could have a quarterback for the rest of the season and just have an average team around him, I think Brady's still the guy. And the reason why is because what we saw on Sunday night looked so normal. And it was so expected. And I told this story at the beginning of my column on Monday morning, and I'll reiterate it here. I was with Troy Brown during the second half of that game, and Troy obviously played with him during the first run, of championships during this Patriot dynasty, and Rob Ninkovich, who played with him during the second run of championships of this Patriot dynasty. And at the end of that game, when Gronkowski catches the ball, we're all saying, let him score, let him score, let him score, because there was no way that in that situation the Chiefs were going to have any chance to come back after that. And we've watched it for the better part of 18 years now. And you look at what he did at the end of that game. They blow a 24-9 halftime lead in the blink of an eye. It's 27-26. 54 yards to a field goal, 75 yards to a touchdown, 47 yards to a field goal, 65 yards to a field goal ball game. He was in control the whole time. And he is the ultimate when it comes to not creating a margin for error for his team, but being the margin for error. Your defense is struggling. It's okay. Brady will score more. Your running game is not hacking it. We'll throw more. Your receivers aren't getting it done. Well, I'll work around that too. Forever and ever and ever, Tom Brady has been able to work around whatever problem the Patriots have had. Outside of probably 07, I don't think he's ever had the best supporting cast. He certainly didn't have the best supporting cast on the field in Foxborough on Sunday night. He's played with deficient defenses. He's played with depleted receiver groups. And things like Sunday night keep happening. And so I'll bring in Jenny and Connor. We were all there. This, again, like, I think there are a lot of teams that would have gone through the first 5 weeks of the season with the roster the Patriots did, with, you know, having taken the blows that they took against Detroit and Jacksonville, and it would have been over. And I think the reason why it's not, I think the reason why they can fight through this no matter what, and the reason why even when they were 1-2 and looked awful, they, you know, there's still this belief that they were going to pull themselves off the campus and be the Patriots again, is because number 12 is still their quarterback, which I think is pretty freaking incredible when you consider he's 41 years old and there's no precedent for what we're watching right now.
And, you know, they are improved around him too. That has helped, right? I mean, Josh Gordon, I think he went to him 3 times on the first drive. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously they've been able to develop something quickly, which is a little surprising. And Sony Michel has really been, I mean, I was trying to think the last time they had a running game as strong as they had on Sunday night. You know, I don't know. It's been a while, right? I mean, Michelle has had 98-plus yards for 3 straight games. Yeah. And so that's added a special element to the offense, too. So, and then on defense, you know, I think with Trey Flowers and Patrick Chung, when those two guys are missing from those 2 losses in weeks 2 and 3, and I think they're like part of those chess pieces that they can move around. So all of those, that's not to say that, you know, because obviously Brady was brilliant on Sunday night, but it does help that, you know, kind of coming out of that early season, you sort of see more what the team is going to look like.
Well, I thought what was interesting too, Connor, was like, so I don't think Gronk's Gronk right now. Like, I don't think he can run. Like, he looks like he's lumbering. I don't think he can run the same way. And just talking to Chiefs people ahead of that game, one of the things that they pointed out was, like, he just – like, the Patriots have to do things to generate separation for him. He's not separating the same way. And so what they're running him off of play action a lot, which has done something to kind of get him in the opening. And they're doing what they can to try to get him the ball and, you know, let him work in the open field. And we saw it on Sunday night. He was invisible until that final possession. And then they run the play off of play action. He comes wide open. He just absolutely crushed the safety, has the big gainer there on the first catch. And then the second catch, he didn't really separate there. Brady just put that ball in a spot. You know, like, Brady just put that ball in a spot where only Gronk could get it. And so I think he's been able to sort of work Gronk through some things. And there's just so much there that, like, you have basically your offensive coordinator. Like, no, Josh does a really good job drawing it up. But you've got your offensive coordinator with his hands under the center's ass. And, like, he's got this capacity to think at another level. And he said it himself, like, I have the answers to the test. He's still got really good physical ability, too. Like, and to put the ball in a spot like that to Gronk, like, and there were a couple throws we saw where he just uncorked. Like, it's just, we've never seen this before.
Yeah, I think what I would say, though, and this relates to Gronk and it relates to a lot of things, is the narrative has always been what Tom Brady's been able to do without quote-unquote star wide receivers. But when, you know, I went back and I watched that game again from Sunday night, and I think what has always amazed me about Patriots receivers, and this includes Gronk at whatever it is, 50%, 60%, is he's also got receivers that do things that no other receivers in the NFL do. Julian Edelman and Chris Hogan are phenomenal downfield blockers. Mm-hmm. Rob Gronkowski is a sixth offensive lineman, and they were abusing, you know, six-man, five-man boxes against Kansas City. I mean, he's a pulling guard. He is opening up holes for Sony Michel. And, you know, I would even challenge a lot of teams to find a tight end. I think it was that long gain where, yeah, it was play action, but he's also looping inside of the offensive tackle, which requires so much finesse and footwork. And I think that, you know, yes, he has done more with less, but Belichick has also put some of these guys around him that extend plays that, you know, maybe aid in the running game, that maybe are willing to give up their body so that another receiver gets open. And I think that has been sort of a hidden tremendous hidden bonus throughout Brady's career, and I think we saw that a lot on Sunday night as well.
Do you guys think he's the best quarterback in the league right now?
Yeah, but apparently, you know, when I wrote that Mahomes went toe-to-toe with the best quarterback, you know, someone wrote to me, so Nick Foles is chopped liver. So, I mean,
go, you Birds.
Know, you know, there seemed to be some disputes in my Twitter mentions on Monday morning there.
What do you got?
I don't know. I think Mahomes was. I think
Rodgers had some stupid throws last night.
He did, but the 49ers played terrible defense down the stretch. Holy smokes! I don't know. I mean, I think it goes back to that question: who is the best right now, or is that also who would you rather start your start a playoff game with, start a franchise with? I don't know.
Who would you take for the next five games?
Mahomes.
The next five games, not 5 years, five games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you could do more.
Mahomes over Brady.
I think you could do more.
Mahomes over Rodgers.
Yes. I mean, look at what the Patriots were doing to him yesterday.
Look what's around Mahomes. I'm not taking anything away from Mahomes, but look what's around him.
I mean, his best receiver is phenomenally talented, but is 5'9" on a good day. You know, and he is finding him in places. I don't know. I would challenge a lot of other quarterbacks
This is no disrespect to Patrick Mahomes, but I just, the infrastructure around him. He's got Andy Reid coaching him, and I think that that's an advantage. He's got a running game with Kareem Hunt. He's got a very, very solid offensive line. He's got, and there we go, I forgot to turn my phone off.
$10,000 in the fine jar.
Can they pick that up, that Harry?
Probably, but, I mean, honestly, you can just re-hit from
Just don't edit it out. Don't edit it out.
Okay, leave it in.
Yeah, so, I mean, like, they've got a running game. They've got a solid offensive line. They've got weapons everywhere, guys who can run all over the place. I think it's a really well-constructed team. I think, like, conceptually, you look at it, and it's like the receivers fit the quarterback. So I think there's a lot going on. You can't take it away from – you can't take away from Mahomes what he's accomplished in his first six, like, real starts, not counting last year. Like, his first six real starts, you can't take anything away from him there. And he would be way up on my list as far as guys I would build around. But for the next five games, like if I had to go and say who, if you put anyone on an average team, who would have the best chance of going 5-0 over the next 5 weeks, I still think it's probably Brady, which is crazy because he's 41 years old. All right, we're going to get to the news, and we're going to look again at the other side of that now. And, yeah, Patrick Mahomes went 9 of 13 for 188 yards and four touchdowns in the second half against New England, leading a comeback from a 24-9 deficit that fell just short. The Chiefs will try to bounce back this week against the Bengals again on Sunday Night Football. And after I just said that I think Mahomes has all this great infrastructure around him and everything's been perfect around him, I think it was what we saw from him when things weren't right that told us more about him than we learned in the first 5 weeks. This was not perfect. They were not playing with a big lead. They were playing without their starting center. Like there was just a lot that they went through on Sunday night, and I think you could see it early in the game. I mean, one thing I think you always want to watch for, like when a quarterback's like consistently missing receivers high, and I think we saw that with Mahomes. I think it generally tells you that the guy's a little keyed up, right? Like, and we saw he airmailed a couple balls early in that game where he just like. You wonder, okay, like this is a kid who's really calm and doesn't seem like he gives an F no matter what. And I think we saw maybe like the moment kind of like you know, okay, he's wired a little bit here. And the fact that he was able to and the Patriots took advantage of it, that's to their credit, build the 15-point lead. But the fact that he was able to settle down and play as well as he did in the second half when, again, things were not perfect around him. And some of the throws he made, you know, the throw obviously to Tyreek. For the touchdown, which, you know, a lot of that was Tyreek being faster than anybody else in the NFL, but it was also Mahomes being able to get the ball downfield. I was so impressed. And I was really impressed, too, watching him in person in that for the first time. And, I mean, I don't know how you guys felt about it, but watching some of the throws he can make in person, like it just looks different than it does on TV. Just seeing, like, the way he moves and the angles he's throwing from and how, you know, his body's in one place and the ball's going somewhere else, I thought was incredibly impressive.
Yeah, I thought, you know, Travis Kelce said after the game that, you know, if anything, Mahomes was a little, like, excited for the moment, right? Like some of those early high throws. But he made clear to say it wasn't that he was nervous. And it was really
wired,
interesting.
I think, yeah,
a little wired, right? And it was interesting that Kelce was like, this isn't, someone asked a question sort of saying, well, it's an intimidating place. And he's like, this is not an intimidating place. Like, I don't think Patrick was intimidated. And he wasn't. Like, you saw him kind of be over-energized and then settle down. And I thought what was so interesting was that he, like, I wrote it on Monday, you know, but you saw him kind of getting better in real time. And I think that's probably the most fun part about watching him. You can kind of imagine, like, how high the ceiling can be because just from the first half to the second half, you saw him sort of log what they were doing, realize his mistakes, sort of understand the different kinds of pressure packages. And then you saw them in the second half take advantage of it. And I think, you know, he was just so unfazed by the loss. And I don't mean that to say that he didn't care that they lost, but he was just kind of in his press conference afterward, he said, you know, you're not going to win every game. Like, this is a learning experience. And that's like, he takes everything as a learning experience, right? And so I think it was fun to hear him explain exactly what he did wrong on both of his interceptions, how he learned from it, applied it. And really, he turned it into a game of who had the ball last, you know? And that's why, you know, you were saying let Gronk score there because, you know, if the Chiefs had gotten the ball back, who knows what they could have done. But I just thought his whole demeanor for a young player right in Foxborough who didn't even know the way to walk to the team buses after the game, he was just so, like, I don't know.
Well,
yeah.
I think the other thing, like, Kelce saying it's not intimidating, I think that's a little disingenuous. It's not an intimidating place from a noise standpoint. It's not – I don't think it's one of the louder places in the league. But I have talked to –
It's the boat horn, right? It's the lighthouse.
The
thing
boat
for
horn
you,
is,
isn't
one
it?
Of the, is one of yeah, the worst. Like that, chilling. That boat horn.
Is it a boat horn?
It's a fog horn, which is one of the most annoying.
Because there's a lighthouse.
Yeah,
right?
that's annoying. I think the train whistles are annoying. It seems like there's like a half dozen teams that have a train whistle for some reason.
You pointed this out the other day. Like, why do the Falcons have a train whistle? And this is a question that we have not yet answered. So yeah. Maybe
I mean,
someone
I don't know.
Can help
is Atlanta like, are there big rail yards or something like that near the stadium? I don't know.
Jenny coming from Penn State with the lion roar, I think that you could just I think you can start.
Wow, that rendition, that gave me chills. Yeah.
It really did. Thank you.
God, that's yeah. I feel like it's third down.
That's right.
State college.
That's right.
But I feel like, you know, that is appropriate and yeah, it is intimidating. I don't feel the foghorn. To me.
But I
the
think Kelsey's point was like Mahomes is not a guy who's yeah, like who is intimidated, and I don't think
I don't think he was, but like I think where we give him credit to, it can be an intimidating place. I've talked to players about this before, and I remember like a couple guys who played for the Texans saying this is like it's just a weird place to go. Like it's the stadium's in the middle of nowhere, especially if you're playing at night. You're coming; it's cold. You're coming over these rolling hills up Route 1, and you can sort of see the stadium lights off
the
in the distance.
The intimidation of rolling hills, Albert.
And it's
suspicious communication lines breaking down.
It's a weird place in a lot of ways. In a lot of ways, I think the other thing is too is like there's a certain psychological game if you're the opposing quarterback to looking over in the other sideline and seeing the guy in the hood who's coaching against you, and number 12 who you're trying to keep up with. Like, I think there is an intimidation factor there too. There's a mystique to going in there, and I think that's something that a lot of, I mean, look, you fall behind early, and I think that it would crack some young quarterbacks, and it didn't crack Mahomes, which I think is a good sign for where he's at.
Here's the one moment that really stuck out to me, and I think that, you know, especially if you're talking about the age of Mahomes and you're talking about what some of the other quarterbacks his age are doing on that first drive that was that 17-yard pass to Kelsey. It was that Oklahoma-style RPO play where, yep, where they conflict Hightower. They get him to come inside, vacate the space, and you hit him. They run that again. And then Hightower goes inside, pops back out, yep, and intercepts that pass. For a lot of players that age, that is a holy shit moment because they need that. They need that in order to succeed. They need, yeah, that easy read.
Right.
But Mahomes was fine. I mean, you know, that is a game-derailing play, yeah, for a lot of quarterbacks who depend on that action to get open reads and to make easy passes. And I think that's
a good observation. Yeah. Absolutely. All right, Connor. We're going to wait for Connor to unlock his phone right now.
It's the you know what it is? It's the six numbers instead of the four numbers. But, okay.
Speaking, you have to do six now, right?
That's crazy. Yeah. Speaking of which, young quarterbacks, Jared Goff posted his worst passer rating in over a year and only completed half his throws. But the Rams, see, you're trying to Ron Burgundy me again here. I'm just going to say Todd Gurley rushed for 208 rushing yards in a 23-20 road win over the Browns.
Right. That's a year situation there. Road. That should be R-O-D-E.
R-O-A-D.
See, so I should have just rolled with it.
Yeah, you would have been.
You
would have been fine. You would have been fine. I'm going to start doing that now. You would have been fine just actually Ron Burgundy.
See, you know, it's just I got to learn to trust my teammates. That's the problem here.
I think this is a good development for the Rams for the same sort of reason that we said that, you know, things going sideways in Mahomes was good for him on Sunday night. I think when you get to January, and I've been there's old cliches like defense wins championships. I think what wins championships now is teams that can win the most amount of ways, because I think generally you get to the playoffs and you're probably going to have to win. Most teams, you get to the playoffs, you're going to have to win probably a shootout somewhere.
Right, defense and then maybe, is not winning much right now.
And then, but you're probably also going to have to win a game that's sort of a rock fight at some point. The Eagles had to do that last year. Like that Falcon game, that was sort of a rock fight, right? And they were able to win that because their defense is pretty good, and then they're able to win the shootout in the Super Bowl. And I think the one question you had about the Rams is, like, if the passing game goes away or Goff isn't having his best day, like, what's it going to look like? And this game was in the elements, right? Like in a cold environment. There was snow early in the day in Denver, and they're able to come in and adjust with Goff not playing his best. His worst passer rating, I believe, in over a year. He didn't play his best. they were able to kind of saddle up with Gurley and win the game. So I think this is a good development for them, because I think we probably start to look at them and say, are they the old school like finesse team? Are they the 1990s Bills? Are they the 1999 St. Louis Rams? Or is that what they are? So if things go sideways on them and they got to play a game in a phone booth, can they win it? I think that, you know, we saw on Sunday that they can still win that type of game.
I'd be interested to see, you know, how much defensively they can grow over the next few weeks. You know, you look at what Wade Phillips brings to teams in initial seasons,
yep.
you know, and then how their defenses kind of have a tendency to dovetail
a little bit,
you know, and I think that that was definitely a major problem in Denver, but it's almost like maybe they tried to reinvigorate him a little bit by injecting so much talented personnel into this team this offseason and, you know, kind of put the onus on him to come up with something creative there. I mean, obviously only giving up 20 points in this league setting right now, I think you have to consider that a win as a defensive coordinator, but I think a lot of people would like to see the complementary defense take a step forward.
I'll have to say that one of my favorite Twitter bits is Serena Morales, the Rams team reporter. She used to work for ESPN, tweeting girl puns as Gurley racks up his yards. So last, you know, like, get it, girl, or this girl is on fire. You know, it's really enjoyable to me. It keeps me, you know, I can't always see the game live, so I know, well, Gurley's having another big day, although not that that is a surprise.
Here's the other thing. I still think the engine of that offense, like, as great as Goff's been, I still think the engine of the offense is Gurley. Like, I think he's, like I think so much of what they did to get Goff, like, functional first and then it, like, turn him into a really good quarterback second, so much of it was based on how good Gurley is and being able to say, okay, we're going to be able to put run action on almost everything we do, and you're going to have to respect it because number 30's back there. It's from McVay's standpoint, I know a lot of it was like doing stuff that Goff did at Cal, and it really got Goff playing faster. And so, you know, I think the fact that you can win a game like that, again, like, kind of like amps up, like, other teams have to respect that. Like, other teams can't just say, oh, we don't believe this. You've turned into a different offense. You're throwing the ball all over the yard. No, like, they can still hand it off to Gurley, and Gurley can still win games for them. And that's why I think Gurley's the engine of the offense, because it's like it's either Gurley himself, like it was on Sunday, or it's the threat of Gurley that's opening everything up.
Well, and it's, you know, it's sort of a no-win for the defense, right? Because they've got this explosive passing game, and they can run out of passing personnel, right? And so then, you know, the box is lighter for Gurley, and it's just kind of, you know, you really don't have a lot of options when you're playing the Rams.
No question.
Cooper Kupp injured, though, which means they're going to have to trade for Odell Beckham. So,
God, can you imagine Odell Beckham out there?
I would love it.
That would be something else. All right, Jenny, news item number three.
News item number three. The Steelers came from behind to beat the Bengals in Cincinnati to go into their bye at 3-2-1. What a record, 3-2-1.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, word emerged from Pittsburgh that the team does not expect Le'Veon Bell to show this week, as was previously reported.
Okay, so I'm going to pull up the calculator app on my phone right now. And if Bell doesn't show this week, then he will have lost. This is week 7, right?
Is that considered an app, by the way? Or is that
or it's just
standard?
Your calculator? Well, they're all apps, aren't they?
That's true.
Everything's an app. Yeah, they're all apps. Le'Veon Bell is going to have lost $4.1 million. And I think there's good and bad to this, okay? I don't think Bell's done himself. I don't think that the money he's lost is coming. Like, that's not coming back. Like, I don't think that there's this huge windfall for him at the end of the season. And I think that what we've seen over the first 6 weeks is that to at least some degree he's replaceable. I think the good news is that because James Conner has emerged, that means they may not run him into the ground. They may actually say, okay, we've got two guys who can be effective now, and so we don't need to use Le'Veon Bell the same way. And so if Bell does come back now, maybe the upshot is they're not going to ride him as hard as they would have previously. And so maybe the workload that he's taking on, the risk that he's incurring by playing the rest of the year, isn't the same as it was back in week one.
And he did seem to be cheering on, you know, James, another emoji use with the
The flex muscle?
Flex muscle, damn James on Sunday, so cheering on his effort. But see, this has always been the interesting, how do you do the calculation, right? So when I did that story a few weeks ago, I asked like people on five teams if they thought Le'Veon's sitting out was decreasing, no change, or increasing his value. No one said increasing, right? So the question is, are you going? How do you recoup that money? You figure that, you know, if this season, you know, if you play this season, you get the same deal in free agency that you would have gotten if you didn't play this season. But he's essentially saying the money that he's losing is, you know, it's worth it to lose it to not take on the injury risk. But that's a tough calculation, and there's really no way to make that calculation because you have no idea
right.
what the injury risk is. You can't really quantify it, right? So, I mean, I think it's unlikely that whatever deal he gets makes up the ground that he's losing in money this year, right? I don't think it's going to be bigger because he sat out. No one seems mm-hmm. to think that. But is he saying, you know, the $4 million he lost, that's his price to pay to not take on that huge injury risk?
I wonder, too, like, did any of this cause, I mean, you know, people around the league are always so hysterical when it comes to should be hysterical when it comes to chemistry issues and when it comes to guys that can come in and contribute to a team and lead a team. I mean, does the way that he handled this affect his market price at all? Are people worried about the fact that, you know, it seems like there was dishonesty with his teammates?
Not only that, you've got the suspension history, too.
Yeah.
Right? And I think we've learned that getting paid only makes you more of what you already are. We saw that with Beckham, right? Like, whatever you were, and I'm not saying like what you were when you were 16, but like whoever like these guys have been the last couple of years, like whoever these guys have been, like, it's just going to make you more of what you already are. And so, you know, Le'Veon, like you see the way he's handled some of this stuff. Like, if you're another team, you're buying that, like that, you're bringing that in. And so now he's got his financial security. Now he can be who he wants to be. And so he doesn't need to worry about, you know, impressing, other teams and putting on his best face for what's ahead as a free agent. No, he doesn't need to worry about that anymore. Now it's just, I've got my money and I can be who I want to be. And I think if I'm another team, of course you're worried about that. You know, I think that's always the concern when you're signing a free agent is like, okay, like now the guy's got money to be comfortable. How's he going to react to that?
I don't think it'll ultimately affect the money that he gets. What team said to me was it might restrict his options, which I guess could, you know, yeah, a smaller a market could. But they said whatever the top bidder is going to pay him, they felt like that would be the same regardless. They're paying for the skill set. They want him badly enough. Someone's going to throw close to the money that he wants. But they felt like the number of bidders might go down. And everyone still said that the value would be lower than Gurley because of the suspension history, because of the age, the wear and tear, and the fact that a lot of people think that Gurley is just a more explosive runner anyway.
And I don't think, like, it's the value of the position, too. I mean, that's, like, it's not. And I think we've said this before. Like, it's not. It's like with Saquon. It's like, no one's saying that, like no one's saying he can't be a great player. Everyone, like, all you need is two eyes. Maybe you don't even need two of them to see like what Saquon can be. But the whole argument with the Giants taking him second overall is just the concept of taking a running back second overall. Same with Le'Veon. It's no one's saying he's not a great player. It's is it worth like sinking that amount of cap space into a running back? And I think it's a fair question because you look at – just look at last year's draft, right? Saquon's great. Sony Michel was available at the end of the first round. He looks really good. Nick Chubb's looked great. He was at the top of the second round. Darius Geis had a fantastic preseason. That's four players there, right? And we're not even – we haven't gotten to, like, Rashard Penny and, like, there's just Mark Walton, who the Bengals got in the fourth round last year. Kareem Hunt and Alvin Kamara went in the third round. And it's not like these were under-the-radar players. These guys were, like, playing for – like, a lot of them were playing for high-profile college programs and did really well at the combine. It's not – like, Saquon's not worth the second overall pick because he's overrated as a player. It's not Le'Veon Bell isn't worth $14 million a year because he's, you know, not a different type of running back. It's just so much easier to find solutions at that position – than it would be, say, maybe to find a left tackle or to find a pass rusher or to find a corner. It's I mean, you can say this. It's relatively easy to find a running back.
Did you mention Saquon so I could do the Nittany Lion roar again?
Yes. Yes.
Great. I appreciate the opportunity, guys.
This has been my favorite part.
You guys
of the
need all the encouragement you can get, right? Huh?
Oh, that's true. It was a rough weekend.
Yeah.
I think bottom line, though, with Le'Veon, I think the one thing that a lot of people are not asking themselves or thinking, okay, great, he's going to come back at some point this season, is if you're the Steelers and you've already established yourself as a locker room that is built on camaraderie, on emotion, that you're all for one and against the way that Le'Veon Bell has been handling this, do you welcome him back into the locker room? And what is the reaction when you punish James Conner then by taking carries away? Because that guy has been working his ass off, and he's running hard.
Yeah.
I mean, he's throwing his body, you know, on, especially in goal line situations the last few weeks. I mean, serious collisions, and so...
There's some fence mending that needs to go on there, too.
Big time.
Like, if the reason why those Steeler offensive linemen... The reason why those Steeler offensive linemen were... One of the reasons why they came out the way that they did in week one, and I've heard this from multiple people, is that Le'Veon told all of them, I'll be back Labor Day. He wasn't back Labor Day. He didn't say anything to them. They reached out to him, and he went dark on them. Like, he basically ghosted them, right? So like now it's like if he comes waltzing back in there and he hasn't been communicating with anybody in the locker room, he hasn't been communicating with anybody in the front office, he hasn't been communicating with anybody in the coaching staff. Now, it's one thing, like, players don't mess with other players' money. That's part of the code, right? And generally, you know, my experience is that, and you guys have covered holdouts before, generally, like, the players are pretty friendly. Like, generally, they're still talking to the guy who's holding out. Like, generally, they're still, like, this is a different type of situation in that way, too.
Yeah, and my experience with ghosting is that it usually torpedoes a relationship.
You have some experience with ghosting?
I'm just offering that up.
So back when I was on the scene, ghosting that term wasn't invented.
You were pre-Tinder? Yeah.
I was pre-Tinder. No, Tinder didn't. There was still, like, a huge stigma around online dating, which I never did, right? Like, so there's a huge stigma around online dating. So, and I think Tinder changed that, right?
Well, I think that ghosting applies just to simply, like, text messaging, too. You just anywhere in the digital
but text
era,
even
Albert.
Text messaging, like, was still sort of new, like, when it was text messaging, like, because I met Emily in 2009. So the text messaging was still relatively new.
I don't know.
Relatively new.
Or well, at good thing people, you didn't well, ghost Emily.
At least, from my experience, there weren't. Now there may like kids your guys' age. They may you guys might have been, you know, texting up a blue streak. I don't know. Like, you guys might have been doing
right,
that.
Right.
But
generational
we
were, divide.
But we weren't. But we were still here. Like, is it cool to text? I don't know. Yeah. So anyway. All right. News item number four. The Buccaneers lost their third straight game on Sunday and allowed more than 30 points for the fourth time in five games. On Monday, the team fired defensive coordinator Mike Smith. I'm going to hand this over to Connor, because Connor, I know you tweeted out a story you did. What was it? Was it last year?
It was, at the beginning of last year.
It was last year, right? Like, a story, and I thought it was a very insightful story, kind of a how-to guide, right?
Basically a coaching survival guide, what you
do. So take us through it.
Yeah. So step one, when your team loses, like, the first few games, is just to insist that you're going to keep on grinding. You know, I think that we're going to keep practicing harder. I think step
maybe
two...
Maybe guys are showing up to the facility a little earlier.
Exactly.
Maybe you could even instruct someone, hey, you know, if you're here, if you want to just put something up on Instagram, like, you just post that up there.
Hashtag rise and grind.
Everybody's
still locked in. Everybody's still buying into the program.
Yeah. Step two is to insist that you're going to spend more time on whichever side of the ball is opposite your expertise. And so that's always a big one that coaches like to do. It's like, well, you know, I'm a defensive guy, but I'm going to start sitting in on these offensive meetings and show that I'm, you know, this guy that understands everything. Dirk Koetter skipped right to steps three and four, which is to surrender play calling duty and then fire the coordinator opposite your area of expertise.
Which is awesome, because you wrote this, like, like everybody needs to click on Connor's story because this was not written in reaction. This is way ahead of Dirk Koetter actually freaking doing this.
Yeah, he stepped right to steps 3 and 4 here, and it just amazes me like how
does he have? He has one more step left, doesn't he?
Well, 5 is the nuclear option is to start criticizing the general manager in sort of coded language to start mentioning that there's depth issues, quote unquote, which we've seen in Oakland, which is an interesting maneuver there, but
talent.
Well,
that's why Gruden's innovating. He's doing
he's going right to step 5, daring them to fire him. But yeah, I mean, coaches don't even have an inspiring way to tailspin anymore. Yeah. I mean, this is just Mike Smith is a respected defensive coordinator. I mean, I think he would have been the Jaguars' head coach had things broken in a slightly different way. And so I don't think that that's the problem here.
The Bucs. I think this is what happens when you like go. This is what happens when you like basically like go all the way down the driveway, say the mailbox is where the pink slip is, right? And you lead the coach all the way down the driveway, all the way down to the driveway to the mailbox. This is such a bad analogy.
I'm a little lost, but I'm trying to.
I feel like you're thinking walking the plank. You're thinking about walking the plank.
But I didn't want to use the obvious one. Plus, there's a tie-in to being a Buccaneer. That'd be kind of corny.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. Let's. I'm gonna. I'm,
Jenny's
I'm,
looking
I'm,
at both
I'm,
of us like we're so.
I'm pulling the ripcord on my stupid analogy. This is what happens when you almost fire a coach. This is what happens when you come so close to firing a coach. This is what happens when you openly flirt with another coach. You guys remember John Gruden night on that Monday night in Tampa last year. I mean, that was so blatant, right? Like, this is what happens when you're that close to firing a coach. You can't get the guy you wanted. You just decide. Like, Dirk Koetter was in an impossible situation. And I think even as well as that offense played in the first couple weeks of the year, I think you had to sort of know that when this thing takes a wrong turn, there's a chance for it to get really, really bad, really, really quick. And to me, it wasn't even the first loss, the loss to Pittsburgh. It was the way they looked in Chicago. And it was like I'm not saying the team quit on Dirk, but that was a little bit of a quitty performance.
Quitty vibe there.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a quitty vibe there.
Yeah, and I mean, the Buccaneers, they were allowing the defense close to 35 points per game. But, this year in the NFL, it's really not that. I mean, it was the worst in the NFL, but there are there's a lot of bad defense going on.
That Bears game
was
bad, though. Like, there were people running wide open all over the place.
Yeah. No, it was interesting. I wrote about this morning, just like why the defense is suck right now. And a lot of it, sure, you can say the rule changes, but the rule changes aren't going anywhere. And so like, what do you need to do to correct that? And interestingly, a lot of coaches said the same thing, is that like fundamentals are sliding and it's hard to find corners who can play the ball in the air, and maybe coaches aren't teaching that right, and they're not teaching the fundamentals. They're too worried about scheme, maybe trying to match these cute offenses that they feel like the fundamentals are sliding a lot. And I thought that was interesting to hear it from multiple coaches sort of point to that as like, because I'm sick of hearing like, okay, the rule changes make it hard for defensive players. That's fine, but they're not going anywhere. You still have to figure out a way to play defense. But now I'm on a little bit of a tangent. Maybe I'm doing my own pirate walk. I don't know, Albert. I'm not sure.
You're almost to the mailbox.
Because that's where pink slips are delivered, right?
All right.
That's how you get fired. You get a pink slip in the mail.
Why do teams, though, like, why are we doing this? This is such a charade. Like, everyone knows that this poor man is going to lose his job at the end of the year. And so instead of...
And he's grown, like, the hostage beard.
He's grown the hostage beard.
Oh, we talked about that last
week,
right?
And it's just like, and instead of just pulling off the Band-Aid, and there are some interesting assistants on this staff, and just giving them a chance to see if they can turn it around and do something like that, you're just plucking, like, his limbs off every week. And it's just like, now you've got to fire this best friend, and now you've got to fire this best friend. And you're going to force him to do all this horrible stuff and gut the staff for no reason when you're going to do what you're going to do anyway.
Now, an interesting question, though. Do you think they're glad that they did not win the Gruden sweepstakes?
I would be.
Well, you're like the...
sweepstakes they weren't glad that they lost, and they should be? For Chip Edward Kelly, baby.
Oh, wow. Offense that's going way back.
Offense is innovating everywhere.
Yeah.
And here he is. They missed out.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe it would have played out differently for Chip in Tampa. Maybe it would have played out. I'm just saying, like, he would have had a little bit more time.
I wish
he might
could
have
describe
had a little bit
Jenny's
more power.
Face after I said that.
Yeah. I was just trying to figure out a way to work Pirates into it, but I was too slow on the draw.
All right. Well, speaking of coaches in trouble, Connor, news item number 5.
This is, again, I'm in
a phone situation.
I was amazed at how fast, because you like switched apps and you did it, and you know that was super quick on the draw.
Is text an app? Like, and back to the question, we're sounding really old.
I think it is. I think it is an app.
I mean,
right?
Albert met his wife before there were working phones, yeah. And then now we're not sure if texting is an app.
Yeah. So. We would telegram each other.
That's right. The email is
a telegram. Is it telegraph or telegram?
My mom was cleaning out some family stuff, and she found a telegram my dad received through, and it was informing him he got like a grant from the National Science Foundation, but he received this news via telegram in 1950, you know, six or something.
Wow.
Pretty remarkable, yeah.
Telegram.
Western Union, I think? Yeah.
Wow.
Which really Western cool. Union, like, was the telegrams, then it was like kind of the way you wire money. But that is sort of out now because you can Venmo people money, right?
That's true. Another app.
Is Western Union still?
They're still open.
They're still
I
around.
See them. Yeah.
So it was Western Union for your dad, and then with Albert and his wife, they emailed on Alta Vista a lot, right? And then
AOL.
Jenny and I were
AOL,
in the tent.
AOL. 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 Yeah.
Well, what about the Pony Express?
We had the dial-up connection.
Sometimes you wouldn't get on. You wouldn't get on.
Hey, we were actually talking the other day about how back in the early days of internet, do you guys remember this? Like, if you were on the internet and someone else in your house picked up the phone, you got knocked off.
Yes.
Back
yes.
then.
See, ours was the opposite. You could not call the house if someone was on the internet. And so when I got suspended from school, the computer online for 2 weeks so that no one could call the house.
All right. Bad boy Connor Orr, news
That's
item
right.
number 5.
The Broncos lost. The Broncos lost to the Rams was their fourth straight. And in the aftermath, GM John Elway told a local radio station, the team is fighting for our lives, and called the defense soft. Later, Vance Joseph, who is a defensive head coach, was asked if he took that to mean he was coaching for his job. And Joseph answered, absolutely. No beard yet. No fired coordinators yet, but I'm guessing that is.
He already fired a coordinator.
Yeah,
he fired a coordinator.
God,
yep.
Yeah, these guys are just.
Because you have the steps down cold. Let's go through the steps and see if he's.
I would say that Vance has not done what I think is an instrumental part of step two, which is to invite a reporter behind the kimono and show him just how hard you're grinding. So have a reporter meet you in your office.
I'm not sure if I like the implication of being behind the kimono.
And you're not going to like where it goes even further than this. Invite a reporter into your office. Show them that that you've been sleeping there. You know, show them there's a bed situation
right.
going
don't,
on there.
Don't mention it, but like just like
yeah,
walk
Yeah, you
them
want the, them to notice yeah. that there's
That's
a bed
the
there.
Today needs to work, I got to say. I'll tell you what.
Maybe the coolest thing about the Vikings' new facility when they took me through it, Zimmer and Spielman's offices have Murphy beds in them.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
They have Murphy beds in their office.
It's all about maximizing space.
Yeah. So, John Elway hasn't exactly been known for his patience in his 8 years in charge in Denver. And I'm not going to be this. I don't have any inside information on this. This feels like the separation point this Thursday night feels like. Because, A, if you lose this one, it's to a bad team. Like, this isn't losing to the Rams, right? Like, if you lose this one, it's to a bad team. And, B, it's not the bye week after it, but it's the closest thing to one, where you have 10 days to reconfigure things. And there's just been whispers out there about potentially Elway trying to convince Gary Kubiak to come back. And I don't know if it'd be in a full-time capacity. I think Florio tweeted about it. It's something that I had heard over the weekend that, you know, there was some talk that Gary could be back on the sideline. There's just a lot of smoke there. And if they look bad against a bad Arizona team on Thursday night, I think all bets are off. I think anything could happen.
It felt like this relationship was just right from the start. Yeah. It felt like his job was in jeopardy. I mean, just a couple games into last season, I felt that way, right? I mean, I it didn't seem like, you know, the offense wasn't doing well and the defense wasn't doing well and nothing was going right. I don't know.
I mean, they've been chasing their mistakes for a while. Now, to their credit, they drafted better this year. Like, Chubb looks like he's going to be a player. They've got a couple of good young running backs in Freeman and Lindsay. Courtland Sutton looks like he's going to be a player there for a long time. But they've been chasing their mistakes for a while. Like, they were chasing the Brock Osweiler and Paxton Lynch mistakes, and they wound up having to pay for it with Case Keenum,
which is on the GM. And right. And it surprises me that, you know, he's so, you know, blatant in his passive aggression towards a head coach that he's sort of hamstrung a little bit here, you know?
Right.
He's a tough guy to work for, too.
He's
a tough guy to work for. And, I mean, if you're going to go get – here's the thing is, like, if you're going to go find a new head coach, that head coach has got to be willing to work in that environment where, you know, like you said, Jenny, like, your job, like, if it doesn't look right after 5 or 6 weeks, your job could be on the line right away.
Right
and
away.
Remember, this is a guy, and in Vance Joseph's defense, like, I always think it's interesting when you see head coaches like that who are younger and who weren't coordinators for very long, because I always think when you hire a guy like that, right, like, when my feeling is when you hire a guy like that, the idea is, like, we're going to grow with him. And so, like, I think when you hire a guy like that, like, it's like you're almost signing up for some of the bumps, right? Like, it's like it's not going to be perfect right away. I think McVay might have screwed that up a little bit because he was successful so quickly. And it's like now, you know, it's just – and it looks cool the way they're running it there and all the rest of it. And instead of acknowledging, like, McVay's a freak, he's different. Like, other teams probably looking at – maybe Elway looks at Vance Joseph and says, what the hell?
Right.
Like, it didn't take him very long to figure it out. Kyle Shanahan was fine in San Francisco. Like, why are we having to ride all of this out?
It's that insane mentality that owners and some kind of distant general managers have where they look at whatever's the most popular thing in the league right now and they say, well, why can't I have that? I mean, after the Seattle Seahawks won the Super Bowl, everybody drafted these massive cornerbacks and hired defensive coaches and thought, well, we can just do this. And then why isn't my team the Legion of Boom? You know, and why isn't this happening? And so we're seeing this on the offensive end now, and a lot of guys are going to lose jobs this offseason, I think, because owners are going to look for this flashy Showtime offense when really Sean McVay comes around once every 15
right.
years.
And it's like it's not – I think it's probably pretty unfair to hold anyone to that standard because what he did has been – like what he's done is insane. And – again, we throw the term freak around a lot with, like, the athletes. Like, I think McVay is a freak, like a coaching freak. Like he sees the game differently than everybody else. And however you wanted to, like, whatever Belichick was and Bill Walt, like that's what McVay is. Like, he's like that sort of thinker. He's just different than most of the rest of them. And holding anybody else to that standard, like, you know, you see the Titans now, LaFleur is going through some struggles with, you know, running their offense. They got shut out against the Ravens. The Ravens are really good, but, you know, they laid a goose egg in what was an important game for them. Like, you can't just take Matt LaFleur and think he's going to be Sean McVay.
To the point one of you made earlier is that years of bad drafting, right? The Broncos and the Giants are both in this situation where it's like they were good not too long ago, and bad drafting has caught up with them, and everyone's thinking, like, well, what's the quick fix? And the reality is the roster is just eroded over a period of years, and there is no quick fix.
So here's my question, because you guys both covered the Jets. I'm starting to wonder if the Jets are getting, or if the Broncos are getting into the territory, or getting closer to that territory where the Jets were a couple of years ago, where they were able to kind of have a one-off really good season in 2015 because a lot of guys stayed healthy, and then they hung on to the older veterans for a year too long, and it all went the wrong way. Like, Von Miller's getting older. Chris Harris is getting older. Brandon Marshall's getting older. Demaryius Thomas is getting older. Emmanuel Sanders is getting older. They've got a bunch of guys that have been their core for a long time. And I think it's like you're still like you look at those guys and they're still your core. Like, do they need to rip the Band-Aid off?
I don't know how you like just hearing you list how many of their important players are aging out of their athletic primes is terrifying because you can't rip the Band-Aid off of that. I mean, that would be a full-on admission that you're tanking the next season, you know, or doing something close to that.
And both of the, you know, both the Giants and the Broncos had this big free agent burst, right,
yes,
a few years ago to try to prop up the roster for, and, you know, the Broncos got a Super Bowl out of it with all those defensive free agents. And, you know, the Giants went to the playoffs a couple of years ago with some of these quick fixes on defense. And now you're basically seeing that that's only like, that's the short, truly the short term. And then it, once that short term burst goes away, you're screwed.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it here. Emmanuel Sanders is 31. Demaryius Thomas is 30. Von Miller is 29. Brandon Marshall is 29. Chris Harris is 29. So they're all either at 30 or going to be there really soon. Yeah. And so I don't know. I think that that's one of those things. It's also a product of, and what happened with the Jets. They had a good run of drafting when Eric Mangini was there. And then things leveled off, and they went through a really bad stretch. And so I think part of hanging on to all those older players is probably, well, we haven't been drafting very well. So, like, where's our core? We have to hang on to the older guys. All right, so this is what everybody's been waiting for. And just to be clear, just to set the stage, just to kind of set the landscape here for everybody, Connor has not told me at all what's happened with his fantasy team this week. I want to hear it fresh. I want to be able to react organically. It's time for Connor's Fantasy Update.
So, once again, the recipient of the Duracell Blowout of the Week award, we are now 1-5. And here's the thing that I've discovered to torture myself. So Yahoo writes game stories off of these fantasy losses.
Very snarky ones, I'll add.
Very snarky. So, are they automated?
Yes.
How does that work?
They just pick the meanest words in the
English
language.
There's automated snark?
Yes, correct.
It's, yeah, so, you know, they
robots are going to take over the world.
Well, exactly. They will take our jobs soon, and this is further proof of that.
A little terrifying. Yeah, but, you know, I took offense to a few things, and I can understand why head coaches sort of parse the language in newspaper stories now. I mean, 120-90... this is not one of these high-scoring leagues. 90 is a good number, and to call that crushing, to call that
a little insensitive.
A convincing victory when really, you know. But anyway, here's what the point that I'm getting to is: we talked about James Conner earlier. He has scored more than half of my team's points for this season, and as we near the trade deadline, I'm looking for a good home for James. I think he deserves a chance to compete for the postseason. I might be sitting next to the right general manager trade him to.
We've been having some conversations.
Yeah, and so I feel good, James. If you're listening, we're gonna take care of you. We're not gonna let you deal with this environment which I've created any longer.
I had a weird, like, my fantasy team, I won by half a point.
Wow,
I won 115 to 114.5. Okay, so I forgot to bench Dallas Goedert and put Trey Burton back in. Dallas Goedert scored a half a point.
And that was all you needed.
One reception for 7 yards. Dallas Goedert scored half a point.
It was the difference in
my game.
In your game. I'm just going to add one really quickly, Connor, is that, you know, you talked about the playbook when the seasons are going awry. And I know that injuries are not an excuse, but this is the time of year when you do point out that your running back position has been ravaged by injuries and that your team was hamstrung because of it. Injuries are not an excuse, but yet they should be one in your case.
I appreciate that. Yes. Leonard Fournette, Dalvin Cook, and Jerick McKinnon were my first three picks.
You did not draft poorly, Connor. You did not draft poorly.
But, yeah.
I have full confidence in your talent evaluation.
Well, thank you. This feels good.
Getting any pressure
this
from
is
the
cathartic.
GM.
Oh, my God. It's nonstop. It's nonstop. We're going to have to figure something out.
All right, guys. Appreciate you coming out.
Thanks.
All right, we'll jump right into the six-pack. You guys know how this works every week on Twitter. On Tuesday, I put out the call for questions. I pick six. If I pick yours, you get an answer here. You also get a like. That means I hit the little heart there on Twitter. We'll start with question number one. This is from C.H. Wessel. That's at C.H. Wessel. What trade would you most like to see before the deadline? I'm going to go sentimental here. I would love to see Larry Fitzgerald get with a contender. I was, I think, 21 years old when, or 20 years old when Ray Bourque got traded from the Boston Bruins to the Colorado Avalanche. I remember seeing him win a championship in another city. I like those kinds of stories where you see a guy's an accomplished veteran who's so respected, and there's no one more respected in the NFL than Larry Fitzgerald, finally gets to the pinnacle of the sport. And so I would love to see Larry Fitzgerald playing for a rebuilding Cardinals team, find a way onto a contender. And to me, the one that sort of makes some sense that I think would be pretty cool would be the Baltimore Ravens. Not because they've got a huge need, because they've gotten more out of John Brown. They've gotten more out of Michael Crabtree than they've gotten out of the position in the past. Willie Snead, too. He fits who they are. Like, he's just a tough, hard-nosed guy. I think you could just see him in a Ravens uniform. And so if there's a trade out there that I think would be kind of cool to see, it'd be Larry Fitzgerald to a contender. And if you're going to press me for a team, let's say Larry Fitzgerald to the Ravens. Question number two from Abby Dweck. That's at Abby Dweck. Are the Jets a contender or pretender for the playoffs this year? I think they're a pretender for the playoffs this year. I think they will be a contender in 2019. Look, I think they've rebuilt the culture there in a very major way. That's something I wrote about in my Monday column. They've got a good young layer of players that I think can be leaders for them for a long time, whether it's Leonard Williams, Jamal Adams, Marcus May, Darren Lee's come along some. They've got Tremaine Johnson there for the next few years. They've got the quarterback and Sam Darnold now. I think you're starting to see the ethos of what they've looked for in players starting to come through. Like, they've really prioritized bringing in guys who are winners from big college programs, who have confidence, who bring confidence to those around them. You've seen that, I think, the last couple of weeks out of the Jets and their wins over Denver and Indianapolis. And so I think there's a lot of good going on there. I still think they're a year away. They're going to have about $80 million to spend in free agency next year. And so they're going to have a chance. And who knows, you know, I mean, there could be some change as far as coaching and all of that. But they've got, I think, a good infrastructure of players now, and they're going to have a chance to make a real leap in 2019. Question number three, we'll stay there in New York, from Brendan, at Brendan Gornick. Are the Giants' offensive struggles due to Eli, the O-line, or Shermer's system not being as good as we thought? I'm not willing to blame Shermer's system yet. Pat Shermer did a really good job in a couple fire drill situations the last couple of years in Minnesota. Sam Bradford quietly had a really good year in 2016. In 2017, they got the absolute most out of Case Keenum, got all the way to a conference championship game. I think the issue right now is, and it's sort of one of those chicken or egg things, I don't think Eli's the player he used to be. I don't think it's impossible if you had a great team around Eli to win with him. The team the Giants have around him, Eli's not capable of carrying him. And the reason why the team around him needs to be carried is because the offensive line still isn't very good, even after they spent one of the first picks in the second round on Will Hernandez, after they spent all that money on Nate Solder. And so I think both Eli and the offensive line are issues. The offensive line is an issue on its own. And I think Eli's an issue because he can't carry the team around him. He can't lift the players around him up anymore. And, you know, the result, of course, is as ugly as it's looked at maybe at any point in Eli's career, as hopeless as it's looked at any time in Eli's career. Question number four from Blondie. That's at Blondie6332. Is Adam Thielen the real deal or just a flash in the pan? I think he's the real deal, but when you look at some of the secondaries he's been up against, some might second guess. I think Adam Thielen is now, right now, one of the toughest covers in the NFL. It's going to be tough for him to keep his pace. I think he's at 56 catches, over 700 yards. He leads the league in both those categories. I think he's one of the toughest covers in the NFL right now, because what they've done this year, what they've done in Minnesota, is they've put a lot on him mentally. And they put a lot on him mentally because John DeFilippo, the new offensive coordinator, thought he could handle it. And so they put it on him to learn every receiver position so he can play inside and out. He can play on the line and off. He can do whatever they ask him to do. And because he's been able to adapt and because he's been able to do that, they can line him up all over the place, which allows the Vikings to create matchups as they want with Adam Thielen. Again, I think that's made him one of the toughest covers in the NFL. I think he is the real deal. I think a lot of this is about a player fitting what a coach wants. A player fitting a certain system. I think it's been a perfect marriage between the receiver and the offensive coordinator in this case. And I think at the end of the year, he's going to be getting all pro votes. Doesn't mean he's going to keep the pace up that he's been at thus far. But I think at the end of the year, we're going to be looking at a guy who might be first or second team all pro. Question number five from the Chuck. That's at Chuck_Licha. Two-part question. Why is Peterman still on the Bills roster? And if Allen can't play this week, would McDermott really start him? Okay. Question number one, and that's really two questions. That's an old reporter trick, two-part question. Why is Peterman still on the Bills roster? Well, I think a big piece of it is because they invested a draft pick in him in 2017. Guys who are drafted into places generally have longer leashes. And, you know, one of the reasons why is because they're on rookie contracts, so they're cheap. And at a position where it can sometimes cost $7 or $8 million for a backup, it makes sense to have a guy on his rookie contract on your roster, especially when you're a team like Buffalo that's carrying over $50 million in dead money. And so I think part of the reason Peterman is on the roster is the investment of the draft pick. Another part of it is because economically it makes sense in the situation the Bills are in right now. As for your second question, if Allen can't play this week, would McDermott really start him? I think that all depends on McDermott's ability to sell Peterman to the locker room. Sean's very good at this, at feeling his locker room out, at having the pulse for his locker room. He's dealt with a lot of different things over the course of the last 2 years that should show you that. And so I think a lot of that will boil down to whether or not the locker room can buy into Nathan Peterman even a little bit anymore. If they can't, I think that they go with Derek Anderson. Finally, question number six. This is from Garbellion. That's at Garbellion. How do you see Paul Allen's NFL legacy as an NFL owner? I think his legacy is solely based on what he did for Seattle. There was some hope when he came aboard 20 years ago that he would have a huge impact from a league standpoint based on his brilliance, you know, has his intelligence, his business acumen, his ability to innovate, which has never been questioned. He just chose not to do that, and that's his prerogative. But he just chose not to be involved in the league at that level. He was something of a reluctant owner when he came aboard. But, you know, the reason he came aboard is, I think, his lasting legacy, which is he saved the Seahawks in Seattle. The Seahawks were, in all intents and purposes, moved to Los Angeles in 1996. And there's a Seattle Times column that did a great job of outlining this morning. But the Seattle Seahawks were in essence, in early 1996, they were about to become the Anaheim Seahawks. And Paul Allen saved them from that. Paul Allen saved Seattle from losing its football team. And so I think that's his lasting legacy. His lasting legacy is that new stadium. It's the new facility that the Seahawks train in. It's hiring Mike Holmgren. It's hiring Pete Carroll. It's developing that 12th man thing to another level. So I think Paul Allen's legacy as an NFL owner is robust in Seattle. On a league level, I don't think it's quite there because it's just, you know, it's a guy with a lot on his plate, obviously, founded Microsoft, owned the Trailblazers in the NBA, too. It's a guy who just didn't, you know, it was his choice not to involve himself on the league level. And so that's his prerogative. But again, he's got a huge, huge impact on the Seahawks staying in Seattle and then becoming what they've become. All right, we appreciate you guys coming out. As always, I welcome your feedback, and I'll take that at my Twitter page, at Albert Breer, at my Instagram, at Albert_Breer, on my Facebook, at Albert R. Breer. You guys can hit me wherever you want. Again, if there's tweets that you think we can go with on the podcast, we're certainly all ears in that stuff. You can also, and this is helpful here, you can also leave us a rating or a review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever they're calling it these days. All of the MMQB podcasts are on one feed, so you can check us all out there. And always remember, you'll do this automatically if you subscribe to the MMQB NFL podcast. Always remember to listen to the podcast that Gary and Andy Benoit do. That's the Monday Morning Podcast and the Deep Dive Podcast, the Gambling Podcast, and again, this podcast. You can get us, you can get them wherever you get your podcast: Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your shows. We're there. Same time next week. I'll see you guys then.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.